This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's good to have you with us today. Another immigration move from the Trump administration calling for fewer immigrants, even legal ones, in America. That's where we start today. On Monday, the Trump administration revoked temporary protected status for up to 200,000 people from El Salvador living legally in the United States. That protected status was granted after a pair of earthquakes rocked El Salvador in 2001. The Trump administration is reversing the nearly 17-year-old policy now, and it's only one case. The administration revoked protected status for Haitians and for Nicaraguans late last year. Back in El Salvador, natural disasters are far from the only problem now. Gang violence has made it the deadliest non-wartime country in the world in both 2015 and 2016. We're going to talk about what a return to El Salvador could mean for 200,000 people who've been living and working in the U.S. legally since 2001 and have no legal way to remain in the country, but also about the Trump administration's broader deportation strategy here that's seen a sharp increase in the arrest and removal of non-criminals. Andrew Seeley is president of the Migration Policy Institute. Andrew, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thank you, Todd.
Andrew, first, what's behind the Trump administration's move to end protected status for these 200,000 Salvadorans living in the United States? We've seen similar decisions, as I mentioned, for Haitians and Nicaraguans. What's the administration's rationale here?
You know, it's interesting because this is a program that's lasted through Republican and Democratic administrations, and we've had Republican and Democratic administrations that have largely tried to balance different sides of the immigration debate. We've seen it as largely good for the country, but have been concerned also about the effects of unauthorized immigration and have tried to sort of balance those two. We have an administration with Donald Trump that feels strongly that immigration is not helping the country, that there's too much immigration, that the fact that much of it has come in the past through unauthorized channels is detrimental to the country, and they're trying to reverse a lot of the policies of the past. And they took a look at the temporary protected status for people from El Salvador and Haiti and Nicaragua and other countries and decided that a temporary program shouldn't go on for many years. This one had gone on for 17 years. It's hard to argue with them on that, on the legal merits of that, and that, you know, it shouldn't continue to be a temporary program. But it is, you know, questionable whether it's a right decision in terms of what's going to happen to these people and what effect it'll have on the U.S. economy going forward.
And let's talk about what's going to happen to these people. A return to El Salvador now for many of these people, every case is different. What might that mean?
You know, these are people who on average have been here for, you know, 20, 21 years. The likelihood is that most will not return to El Salvador. Most will stay in the U.S. and they'll move into the shadows again. They'll move out of what have been legal jobs that they've had for years and then move into probably jobs that are less well paid and less visible in the informal economy. But those that do go back, of course, are going back to a country they haven't been in for a couple decades. They're often taking American-born children who've never been to El Salvador and may or may not speak or write the language well. And they're going into a country that has its own real pressures. I mean, as you mentioned the story, El Salvador has really has the highest homicide rate for any country not at war. It's a country under enormous stress. It's a country that's done moderately well economically in the past few years, but from a very low beginning, and where, though the Salvadoran government has said they'll try and help people insert themselves into jobs, into the labor market, they're going to have trouble finding work unless they're bringing money back that they can invest in a small business. So it's going to be a tough road for many people that decide to go back, and my guess is most will decide to stay in the United States.
Well, Andrew, if we take a step back, though, from the revocation of temporary protected status, this is just one part of what seems to be a broader strategy here from the Trump administration. People refer to this term interior deportations. What does that term mean, and what's behind this strategy for the Trump administration?
Yeah, we haven't seen this before. I mean, when we talk about the first year of the Trump administration, you know, things have changed. They haven't changed as dramatically as we often think. But the position behind what's changing is radically different. I mean, the Trump administration believes that we have too much immigration in the country and that it is driving down wages and leading to criminality. There's some debate about the first one, about what are the wage effects. Most people find there's not much of a wage effect, but some people disagree. It's clear that there isn't an effect on criminality. Immigrants actually commit many fewer crimes than native-born Americans. But that's the position of the administration, right, that we have too much immigration, and those that came without legal papers should go back. And they become much more vigorous. And this is a real change from what we've seen under Obama, but also Bush, under Clinton, under Bush father, under Reagan. I mean, this is a real shift, actually, in how we look at immigration from the government, from the federal government. And so we've seen in the past year a 42% increase. This is from January 20th through September when the fiscal year ended, 42% increase in the number of people who were detained inside the United States for not having legal papers. And that's a huge increase in 1 year, still below the numbers at the height of the Bush and the Obama administrations, but you can see where things are going. I mean, they're really going to put a major emphasis on trying to go out and arrest people that are in this country without legal papers.
And so that's what's behind this term interior deportations and sort of the policy imperatives behind it. We wanted to look at one particular case, Andrew, the case of Juan Carlos Mendez. He's 27 years old. He's an auto mechanic from the Cincinnati area. Now, he's not Salvadoran. He's from Spain. But his case kind of points to this idea of interior deportation and what might be going on with ICE officials, immigration officials, as they police people without papers. Listen.
He came to the United States on a visa program from Spain. He met a woman named Sandra Mendoza, who had a young son named Ricky. They fell in love and moved in together.
So in February, Sandra got into a car accident that left Ricky paraplegic and left Sandra and Juan Carlos as his only trained caregivers. We're hearing here from Mark Kernut. He's the race and community reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. He's been following Mendez's case.
An order for deportation was put on him on December 15th. Juan Carlos's attorney had filed directly to Immigration and Customs Enforcement an appeal for a one-year suspension of the deportation. She was citing hardship that Juan Carlos's departure and separation from his family would cause them great suffering.
I can't work no more because I have to take care of my son.
ICE last week on January 4th issued a letter in which it denied the appeal, citing Juan Carlos's overstay on his visa.
So, Andrew, another key aspect of this case that I want to point out is that Juan Carlos came to the attention of immigration officials after being pulled over in a traffic stop, driving without a license. The sheriff's office in Butler County, where he was, alerted immigration officials once they detained him. That case that was just reported there, Andrew, is this the type of case that the Obama administration would have pursued? Has something changed here?
You know, the early Obama administration might have pursued it. It's hard to tell. Each case is different. But towards the end of the Obama administration, the last 3 or 4 years, they were very clearly prioritizing people who had serious criminal convictions or who had just entered the country, who had just come across the border. So a case like this would have been low priority and might well have resulted in a different kind of resolution. What we're seeing now is a huge shift, right? I mean, one is towards greater cooperation again with local law enforcement that had waned a lot towards the end of the Obama administration. So really trying to collaborate with those jurisdictions that are willing to collaborate with immigration enforcement. And it's a mixed picture out there. A lot of jurisdictions aren't cooperating and much less discretion when cases of hardship are involved. I mean, there is discretion still in immigration enforcement, but the window's closing, or at least it's narrowing.
There was a term that got thrown around in the Republican primary back in 2015, 2016, Andrew. I think Mitt Romney uttered it, self-deportation. The idea was to make life hard enough on people here illegally that they would just pick up and leave, that they wouldn't want to be here because it wouldn't be smooth sailing for them anymore. Has any of that self-deportation idea become a reality now?
I don't think we've seen self-deportation. We have seen a drop in the unauthorized population, a slight drop in the past 10 years. It hasn't grown at all, and the best numbers tell us there's a slight drop, but probably not because of enforcement measures. That was more a slow U.S. economy. It was a better economy in Mexico, which had been a source of a lot of unauthorized immigration to the U.S. What we have seen, you know, and the Trump administration is really gambling on sending signals through things like canceling TPS and deporting some of these hard cases that'll make it that people will think twice before they come across the border or they overstay a visa. And by the way, probably more than half of the people that are staying illegally in the country now are overstaying visas rather than coming across the border. There is a lot of evidence that the number of people coming across the border has slowed. And so there may be some effect of the policies, but there's no evidence as yet that people are leaving the country, that they're self-deporting in any way. Most people are hunkering down and deciding to try and make a life in this country, even if it means a lot more hardship for them and their families.
Well, you mentioned that some of the numbers have gone up in terms of detaining and deporting non-criminals in the United States, but deportations went up under the Obama administration. Immigration rights groups dubbed President Obama the deporter in chief. Does President Trump deserve to take that title or not? What do the numbers really say?
I think President Trump might be delighted to get that title if he gets it down the road. I mean, I think he wants to make a statement. He believes that the U.S. government should be sending a signal to the world that people shouldn't be coming to the U.S. without authorization. So they should be leaving if they're in the country. What we did see under Obama was a real shift. And I should say both Bush and Obama were at one point very tough on immigration enforcement. The end of the Bush administration, the beginning of the Obama administration, very tough, high levels of deportations. But they did it because they wanted to get to an immigration reform. They actually wanted to reform the immigration system. They wanted to show they were policing the immigration system on one side so that we could actually change our visa system and be more generous in immigration on the other side. This is a different philosophy behind this. I mean, President Trump believes there are just too many immigrants in the country and that there should be as close to zero tolerance as possible, not quite zero tolerance perhaps, but as close to zero tolerance as possible for people staying in the country illegally. And I think they're going to try and get to a place where they have numbers that are much greater than they were under the Obama administration. We're not there yet, but I think that's where they certainly want to head in the coming years.
Still, at the same time, before we let you go, Andrew, there is a much narrower immigration deal on the table now, or at least potentially as Congress faces down a potential government shutdown. President Trump seems to be willing to let 700,000 dreamers stay in the country legally as long as he gets billions for his border wall. What does that say?
That tells you that things may not be quite as black and white and as clear-cut as we think, which is that President Trump also does have some sympathy with certain groups of immigrants, in this case people that came as children to the United States with their parents, and that, you know, down the road we could still see shifts. That right now we're seeing the hard edge of immigration policy, mostly focused on enforcement. But there could be deals that look at both sides of immigration, both the facilitation side, who gets in, as well as how you police the borders. And that could happen down the road. We don't know.
And certainly now, no broad, comprehensive immigration reform in the foreseeable future. We might have to see after the 2018 election and what message politicians take from voters then. For now, narrow deals and a new policy of interior deportation from the Trump administration. Andrew Seeley, president of the Migration Policy Institute. Andrew, thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.